Blog Talk Radio.
And Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A, and Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, Super Bowl, how you doing?
Fine, Donald, fine. Yes, Super Bowl. The world is watching the great event, if you will, for the overall title of professional football, whatever that means. A lot of money, a lot of money. But, Don, let me do this. I have promised a number of people that have called since last night and et cetera. We want to, here on the Don and Ron program, extend our prayers, if you will, to the family. We will let the name be told in another medium, if you know what I mean, because I'm not sure that the police have actually released the name, though we are aware of it. But our condolences to the family of a 21-year-old African-American, beautiful young lady, gunned down in the middle of the street on the 2200 block of Lindale Avenue North in Minneapolis last night. A heavy police presence, if you will. You would have thought that a gun battle of the one and the magnitude that took place along Lindale last night, that authorities, you know, would have been there much quicker. But, you know, it is what it is. But again, our condolences from the Don and Ron program to the family, the young lady, a resident of Brooklyn Park, as we understand it, 21 years of age, another African-American gone. This comes on the heels of two other African Americans, one female, one male, shot down under mysterious circumstances, questionable circumstances in the city of St. Paul. So anyways, we want to do that. Again, our condolences to the family. Also, we will be having some inquiries from around the country on the continued investigation, if that's what you can call it, the death of George Edward Washington, beaten to death in the Kandy, Ohio County Jail, on which Wilmer, Minnesota, is the county seat. Thank you. We want to get that in. All right, Mr. Allman, I was going to say we have a guest, a state official. Let's get them in, and why don't you start out the vetting and then the question.
Yes, I'd like to welcome live on the air with us tonight at last minute notice, well, last hour's notice, I should say, the executive director of the Council of Black Minnesotans. Before I totally introduce him, as you know, Mr. Edwards, we've had former executive directors from the council, Edward McDonald, mm-hmm. Mr. Edward McDonald, when it was the Council on Black Minnesotans. We had Dr. Lewis Porter. And also, you know, now we've had Mr. Patwin Lawrence, who is the chairman of the board for, I think, maybe 3 years. I think he was the longest serving chairman of that board, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, okay.
He will let me
That's
know.
Right.
I'm sure.
He had him on the program
here
a couple times. So
a few times, mm-hmm. Yes. He did a lot mm-hmm. of stuff. And tonight I'd like to welcome Mr. Justin Terrell. Mr. Terrell, welcome to our show.
Yo, thank you for having me. I'm excited to spend some time with you guys.
So let's just start out here and then work our way up or down or sideways. And can you just explain to our listeners what the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage is? Because I keep calling it the Council of Black Minnesotans. I really love that name, but I know it's a new name now. And I just want you to you know, if you can, kind of capsulize it and let us know. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Council from Minnesotans of African Heritage has, you know, was formerly the Council for Black Minnesotans. It's been around since 1980. You know, it's been established along with, it was the first ethnic council to be established, but along with the other three ethnic councils for Asian Pacific Minnesotans, Latino Minnesotans, and Native American Indian Minnesotans. Our charges are all pretty much the same. So our mandate is that we advise the governor and the legislature on issues that impact our communities. We have direct access to the governor's office and to the legislative leadership. And
just a minute. I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you, but you just said something
that
it made my spider senses go off. So you have a direct outlet directly from the councils directly to the governor.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Governor Dayton, you know, it's not like I have him on speed dial, but we definitely do work with his office and his cabinet members, primarily with Commissioner Lindsay, and then primarily with James Burrows in the governor's office.
And for our international and national audience and domestic, for that matter, or local, I should say, who is Kevin Lindsay and who is James Burrows?
Yeah, so Commissioner Kevin Lindsay is the Commissioner of Human Rights at the state of Minnesota. And James Burrows, you know, always forgive me for not having his exact title, even though I do work pretty close with him. He's sort of the diversity liaison for the governor's office. For example, he led the MLK Celebration Council and whatnot this year. And so we work directly with him. You know, in the past, I have a pretty good relationship with Governor Dayton and worked with him on issues such as voting rights restoration. And so, you know, I come into this job really looking to do my best to represent the needs of our community and make sure that we can advance our entire state forward, because, you know, my position is that what's good for us is good for the entire state. And so that's how I approach the work.
Yeah, and I just looked this up. James Burrows is actually the inclusion officer for the state of Minnesota.
Thank you.
So somewhere, he's including someone. I don't know what that means, but yeah, that's what it says here. And it's online and it's public, so there's not me making it up. I mean, I would
well,
if
I
there was nothing there, but there. Go ahead.
Well, I will say that James does a great job, advocating for our community with the governor. We work close with him. I will say the other duties that the council has is we advise the legislature. We have access to the revisor's office. We can, you know, basically write our own legislation. We'll still have to recruit people to support it in the legislature. But you know, our job is to really make sure that legislators know how the work that they're doing is impacting our community. And then I feel like I'm forgetting something. But as far as our structure goes, we have 11 board members appointed by the governor, four representatives from the state legislature,
wow,
which is two Republicans from two Republicans, one House, one Senate, two Democrats, one House, one Senate. At current, we have vacancies, so your listeners should pay attention to that. We only have one legislative appointee, which is Representative Moran, and we currently have some expiring terms, but we have two open board seats.
Basically what you're saying, you have some board openings, and so if they go to the Secretary of State website and go for open board positions, I think that's the title of it, they can apply to be one of the board members on the Council for Minnesota's of African Heritage. Okay, great. Yeah, I keep applying for boards.
It's a council member seat. It's not really a board. I think it's important to note that the council doesn't have they didn't hire me, for example. Like, they don't have governing power over the staff or whatnot. But the council members it's a working council or board, if you will. So the idea is that these are representatives from the community who are there to, you know, meet with legislators, who are there to carry out the work of the council. And so when people are applying, I just want them to know that this is a little different of a situation where, you know, it's not so much as a governing board as it is a working commission. So if you apply, you better come to work, because we need as many black folks at the Capitol talking to legislators, trying to make sure that they know what our community needs.
Okay. So this is different since they, three years ago, I think they passed a new legislation and we kind of formatted the board. So they kind of made it from like a board to a working council now. And
I think that's great.
I think that's great, because we need, you know, those people on the council for Minnesotans of African heritage working for, you know, the people of Minnesota. Because that's very important that they do that. You just educated me, because I was used to the old, you know, I went to the old meetings they had, board meetings, like starting in, you know, the ones in 2009 and 2010 where you had to come packing. But anyway, we're not going to talk about that today because it's a new day. But so this year, 2018, and for transparency, I would just like to tell our listeners that, you know, I've had several conversations with Mr. Terrell, and, you know, I am sometime abrasive, as people say, and Mr. Edwards also, they say that, but, you know, we don't really pay much attention to that. But, you know, we have asked serious questions about the state of black Minnesotans, the state of Minnesotans of African heritage for that much. Let me ask you this question. Do you think changing the council's name from the Council on Black Minnesotans to the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage was a better move? Do you think that we're getting more done? Are there more significant successes with that name change? Is it including more people? Is the legislation, is the revisor's office picking off the charts with new legislation focused on this group versus before the name change? What's your opinion, sir?
I do think there's a lot in the name. I think branding is important. I think mission and how people choose to carry out the mission is more important. I actually have no attachment to either one of the names. The reality is that, you know, in Minnesota, the darker your skin, the really your problems. And we have a council, which is a structure that is built into state statute as a tool for our community to leverage power at the Capitol. In my opinion, and I don't think this is a secret to anyone, that tool has not been used effectively for a while. And, you know, I'm somebody who comes to the table just looking to do the best I can for the community and really make sure that, you know, we are building as much power as we can, because reality is, let's be honest, like these legislators and lawmakers, you know, even the governor, whose heart is in the right place, in my opinion, none of these folks are going to solve the problems that we're facing. None of them have an answer to what happened to that 21-year-old young lady on the north side. But I do believe that we do, right? So I just think, you know, regardless what you call it, regardless who's in charge of it, whatever, I know that I'm stepping to the plate trying to do my best for that young lady and her family, for the folks that I've worked with in the past, for the people in greater Minnesota, the folks in Wilmer and Kennedy, Ohio County. You know, I want to make sure that we just use this tool to build as much power as we can for our community, because no one's coming to save us. Let's just be real about that. We got to put in work and do it ourselves.
Okay. You just said something that sparked my interest before I hand you over and let Mr. Edwards, he has some questions. I see the light, the buzzer here in my studio. The 21 million. And we have to get into this because we want to show transparency and that we're not – this is not a puff piece. There were a lot of questions when this – it was like $70 million total over 2 years, this urban agenda piece that a few people had, you know, in our community and the Urban League, Sabathany, Stair Step Foundation, the usual suspects. They kind of got together and they said, hey, you know, we need this money, blah, blah, blah. And I guess it passed. But the thing is, I know that Emerge in North Minneapolis did well. I know that some other agencies did well. But how are we going to prevent the misdirect of funds? I'm not saying that this is no victim mentality at all coming out of me, but in North Minneapolis, according to the Northside funders, and I know there's black people everywhere, but just let's deal with a small area first. If you solve a small problem in a small area, you can solve it in a bigger area. But anyway, North Minneapolis, after the tornado 2011, there's 45,000 people living there. So that's great. So the Northside funders came out with this report. And it's pretty detailed, and it's really cool that they even did this, because I wouldn't think, while I look for my iPad here, I didn't think that there was a report out here anywhere, and I was kind of shocked because I looked at it, and it was telling, to say the least, but it said that the current poverty rate for African Americans population of North Minneapolis is 42%. The current poverty rate for white non-Hispanic population in the metropolitan region is 6.2%. Mm-hmm. Another fact they had here, I'll send it to you. I should send it to you so you can read it too, because I have it right here on my iPad. It says, reducing North Minneapolis's African-American poverty rate to match the metropolitan white poverty rate would require this many people to move out of poverty.
Mm-hmm.
It was 7,116 people. So in order for the black community of just this area, North Minneapolis, to match the white poverty rate, it was said by the Northside funders in black and white here that 7,000 people would have to somehow come out of poverty. So we know that the tornado was 2011 during the summer, and 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, that's 7 years. I'm getting to my question. Say Hennepin County spends an estimated $1 billion a year for people 12 to 21. You have the millions of dollars that have come to North Minneapolis via nonprofit outlets.
Mm-hmm.
And with this money, they were somehow unable to take 7,000 African Americans in North Minneapolis out of poverty. Mr. Terrell, how do we solve this? Do you have any clue, any answers?
I mean,
that's a big one. It's a big one, I know.
I mean, let me wave my magic wand, if you will. I think, not to dodge your question, but to just kind of go a layer deeper on the numbers that you're reporting, those numbers don't often get talked about, which is really important. You know, I've heard different numbers as well, like around, like, you know, more conservative number is like 11,000, right? But here's the thing that's true about both of those numbers is that is doable, right? Those are numbers that are completely reasonable for us to like build a strategy, you know, public-private partnerships, making investments in communities, like building a long-term strategy about the Broadway corridor, thinking about, you know, if we're going to spend $72 million on the river development project, you know, like we should be making sure that, you know, we don't use that as a way to gentrify the rest of North Minneapolis, right? Like, so I mean, there's a lot of things, but I think that to answer your question, how do we do it? I mean, we know first of all that if you set targets and goals for employment and housing and healthcare, if you set those targets and goals and put the resources into the organizations that know how to hit those targets and goals, we know that strategy is, to me, the most effective. Just by putting like random dollar amounts into the community, I don't care if it's the most trusted brothers in the neighborhood, I don't care if it's the cats on the block selling dope. If you don't have like outcomes and strategies attached to it, that money is going up in smoke. And so I think we saw this with a couple, like, you know, I know everyone, I'm not the biggest fan of this project, but one project that I can point to is U.S. Bank Stadium, right? They set goals and they hit their goals and went beyond their goals. Now there's, like, trust me, I have plenty of critiques of that project, but the fact of the matter remains that they set goals and they got, and they hit their goals and they actually went beyond their goals. And that made a difference. It made a difference in a young Northside kid that I know who ended up working at the stadium and earning $15 an hour at 19 years old. And that made a huge difference in his life and what he's able to do, right? And I also know some brothers that worked on the project that were came out of prison, worked on the project, and didn't go back to prison, right? Because they wasn't giving up that $25 an hour. And so once we get to the street level, you know, those are the strategies that I would support. Is anything that has like targeted, strategic, and targeted outcomes attached to the dollars, so that we can go back a year from now and say, did we hit our goals? Did we, you know? And I think that's how you get to the 7,000 and the 11,000 numbers. So.
Okay, cool. We've been talking about history, and before I introduce Mr. Edwards, I need to reintroduce him because Mr. Edwards is the longest-seating chairman of the board of the Minneapolis Urban League. He was on the NAACP for the longest. He's had a television show 22 years, if not more, on Minneapolis Television Network and elsewhere, radio, television, I mean, internet, everything. And he is probably one of the most knowledgeable civil rights folks, historians in this town. But our buddy James Burrow couldn't find it in his heart to give him an MLK award. Now that's a problem. I'm not putting that on you. But Mr. Edwards, do you have a question for Mr. Terrell? Go ahead, please.
Oh, certainly I do, Don. And first of all, good evening, Mr. Terrell, and welcome to the Don and Ron program. A couple of questions with regards to your responses and dissertations to a couple of questions. We really haven't gotten into the actual structure of the Council on African Heritage. First of all, what is your staff complement, and what is your departmental budget?
Yeah, so don't quote me on the – I mean, you're obviously quoting me, but as far as budget goes, I think – I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but we're hovering around $400,000, I think, is what our operating budget is, which, a quick story on that is that we didn't get an additional appropriation last year. So one of the things that I'm going to be working on this year is trying to figure out how to increase our budget, even though it's not an appropriation year, but I want a strategy in place for that when that comes up. And then our staffing, you know, we have four full-time employees. So there's myself, the executive director, and outreach coordinator, a liaison, legislative liaison, and an administrative/communications person. So the two other positions are not filled. The admin and the legislative staff are vacant, and I'm working on restructuring those positions and getting them posted soon. We probably won't hire the legislative coordinator until after session, just because right now it's too late in the game to get somebody in the door and get them running.
Okay. Well, if I could ask, sir, what was your appointment date? You were appointed when?
So I was hired on December 1st.
December 1st. Okay.
Yeah. 2017. Yeah.
17. Yeah. 2017. Yeah. See, I go back to when it was the council. Of African Americans, blacks, whatever, and with Lester Collins, as you remember that name. Though you are a young man, but you grew up on the north side, did you, or was it South Minneapolis?
Nah, man, I'm a Southsider, man. I grew up on 42nd and Park. I grew up in Phillips neighborhood. My uncles, you probably know my uncles, you know, the Robbins family, like Rocky Robbins, and all those guys. My uncles, grew up all over, you know, South Minneapolis. That's my clue.
Yeah, sure. In fact, didn't they have an Ed Robbins that was a member of that family?
Yeah, Eddie Robbins, that was grandpa, yeah.
Yeah, that was your grandfather, right. Yeah, because he sponsors and the organization continues to sponsor a couple bowling teams that we've been on for the last 40 years. Yeah, so, I remembered you from many years ago.
I was wondering if you were going to bring that up.
Yeah, I remember you. But to take a look at a couple things. You received your master's degree from the University of Minnesota at Duluth, is that correct?
That is not correct. So I attended University of Minnesota Duluth to study my master's in advocacy and political leadership. And about halfway through the program, I dropped out so I could take the job that I took at Take Action Minnesota to be the Justice for All program manager. And so I'm still working. I take a class every now and then, but I've not completed my master's.
Okay. Someone was saying they were looking at your website, and it indicated that you had possibly completed your master's. We were going to say congratulations on that. Just a couple other questions. We appreciate you taking the time to spend with us, to educate us on what is happening. As I said, I go as far back as the very beginning when Lester Collins came in as the director and served I think 20 years, Don, if I'm not mistaken. A couple of additional questions with regards. What other affiliations have you had with government agencies, if you will?
You know, I've never worked for the government. I was wondering if you were going to bring this up. So you and I met for the first time, I believe it was 2006, when I was appointed to the Civilian Review Authority in Minneapolis as a board member charged with adjudicating complaints of police misconduct. And that 2006, if you remember, which I'm sure you do, was the restructuring of the council. And, you know, the city council was civil rights department was going through all kinds of changes before Velma. And you know, we were in a fight for subpoena power and all those things. And honestly, like, that's where I started learning politics, was watching you and a couple of other community members come in and hold the board and the department accountable, and force us to really look at being a little bit more hard with the
that was back in the days of, let's see now, Jane Khalifa, right?
James Khalifa, you said? Was that on the commission?
Jane Khalifa was on the director of the Civil Rights Department?
No, it was Michael Kip Brown was the interim director when I joined. And then after that, we got Michael Jordan.
Oh, you joined in 2005. Is that what you're saying? And you said Kip Brown was the interim director? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Was that before or after Michael Jordan?
It was before Michael Jordan, because Michael Jordan came on afterwards. And, you know, his tenure wasn't very long or, in my opinion, very helpful, not to dismiss him, his leadership. But
okay. And then, Kip Brown came back to head the department? Is that the narrative?
Yeah, I believe so. You probably know better than I do. I stepped off in 2010 after Governor Dayton signed.
Is this the same Kip Brown that is now a district court judge? Is that the same Kip Brown?
Once again, Mr. Edwards, you would know better than I would.
Is that right?
I haven't followed this.
Continuing on, I noticed you just a little while ago made reference to Canty, Ojai County, and Wilmer. Have you officially gone up there this month?
This month, no, but I have. You got to remember, I come to this work with organizing across the state, and so on criminal justice issues. And so there was, I spent a lot of time in Wilmer working with, I've met the mayor of Wilmer, had dinner with him at one of my former volunteers' homes. I've spent a lot of time out there and stay connected to the community. There's still a lot I got to learn. You know, I haven't broken into the Somali community at all. And so I'm still learning I still got to build those relationships, which is, you know, part of what my job is now. So,
okay. What years were you up in Wilmer?
2000. I mean, did I go out there in 2017? I would assume I went out there last year. I know I was out there.
Oh, last year?
You worked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I led discussions out there on voting rights restoration.
Mm-hmm.
The prison issue that came up in Appleton is in Wilmer, but it's close to that area, so I worked on. You know, we did a lot of work trying to.
Now, when you talk about Appleton, you're talking about the private penitentiary that was in Appleton, right?
Yeah. So we did a lot of work.
City. Yeah.
Right.
So
right.
You worked on things like that. Okay. All right then.
Yeah.
So what is your legislative agenda going to look like, and will you have enough time to present your legislative agenda to the legislature? They convene, what, the 20th of February or thereabouts?
Yeah, the 20th of February. So I expected this question, and unfortunately I don't have, a great answer, because my position on this changes every day. So actually I would actually be open to hearing what the two of you think our legislative agenda would be, but let me give you some context. So typically, a lot of times, especially, different groups from our community, from the Black community, go running into session with a long agenda, trying to get funding for this and trying to move different pieces of policy. And we haven't really taken the time to build the muscles and the tools to actually get all of that done. And I'm really interested in building those muscles and tools to be able to, actually advance a long-term agenda. And so this year is really my focus is going to be on that. Can we get Black folks to the Capitol on a regular basis is one question I want to answer. Can we get folks to just kind of learn the legislative process? Maybe it's us leading some training and whatnot. But if you look at the political landscape right now, I just don't know that it makes sense to have a robust agenda this year. We could talk about education and housing, criminal justice and voting rights restoration. But honestly, I think the most important thing is, can we get Black folks to vote this fall? And can we get folks talking about the issues we care about over the summer? So I am less inclined to try to put together a robust legislative agenda on issues that, honestly, in an election year, a short session, a bonding bill year, one lawsuit, potentially another, between the governor and legislative leadership. There's also people aren't talking much about this, but there's also an issue of legislative staff whose contract hasn't been settled. The contract was settled with management, but the legislature didn't approve it. And so there's a rally on the first day, I believe it's on the first day of session, with staffers, right? So my point is that it's going to be the landscape to try to get things done this year is just not looking good. So then my thing is, what does our community need? And I'm like, at the end of the day, we just need to be at the Capitol and start building relationships with more legislators than just Bobby, Joe, and Jeff, right? We need to talk to some of those white legislators that represent some of the blackest communities in the state. So, who are the legislators who represent Nobles County, where you have, a huge increase in people of color, Kandy, Ohio County? We need to have Black folks talking to Dave Baker, right, Representative Dave Baker. We need to have Black folks talking to the legislators who represent Moorhead, and which is Representative Kent or Senator Kent. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Okay. All right, then.
So that's what I'm really interested in doing.
Yeah, appreciate you taking the time to join us here on the Ron and Don program, and wish you the best in your pursuit, if you will, and whatever agendas it is that you're able to develop. I think it would be just wonderful if some of the folks that have been talking with you and et cetera help with some statewide public hearings and et cetera. Is that something that you're looking at that you're comfortable with?
I'm sorry, could you say that one more time?
Statewide public hearings and et cetera. Is that something you're looking at? That's something that's always recommended by people. Getting out into the hinterlands and et cetera. Yeah.
You're talking about me traveling statewide and talking to folks across the state?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. That's a high priority for me, starting in June or July.
June or July?
Ask you a question?
Okay.
Yeah, after session. To ask you a question, though, what do you think the council should be working on? I mean,
this works better than
just about anybody.
That's something for another day and another time. And beside that, I'm considered to be a hardliner, young brother. I think you know that. And so, yeah, people have a tendency to say one thing to a person and say another thing in another kind of setting. I'm waiting on the leaders and the leadership, Mr. Terrell, waiting on them to give us the guidance as the masses, if you will. So when I hear that and see that when I get a feel for what your legislative agenda is going to look like in 2019, then I would be in a position to probably be a little bit more intelligent and sound intelligent. I'm an old timer, you know what I mean? And there, you know, as Mr. Allen said, there are some of us who are considered to be dinosaurs, if you will. So at some point in time, after we see something that's a part of a progressive schedule, then I will make my thoughts and et cetera known. But, of course, my thoughts are known. They are well published and et cetera. But I just want to thank you for taking the time to be with us, Mr. Allen. Do you have any other questions of Mr. Terrell?
Well, while we wait for Mr. Allen to respond, is it okay if I plug our Day on the Hill for your view?
Sure. I heard you on an urban contemporary station, I think it was Sunday, plugging it.
Yeah.
Go right ahead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we just want to invite the community out, especially we would love to have you there, Mr. Edwards and Mr. Allen. We have our Day on the Hill, African Heritage Day on the Hill, Tuesday, February 27th. From 1:30 p.m. to 4:30 p.m., we'll have a big rally in the rotunda, and then we're going to go and visit with legislators and drop it on their offices and make sure the community learns their way around the Capitol. And then my hope is to continue to have people at the Capitol every week in small groups so that
all
we
right
can continue
then
to learn our way around.
All right.
So thank,
all right.
Thank
Sounds
you.
Like some things thank we were doing in the 1960s. That's out of sight. All right, Mr. Allen, are you back with us? We want to wrap. I know we've got some calls. And we want to thank, again, Mr. Terrell for spending this time with us.
Thank you. It's an honor. Yeah.
Hello.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Terrell. Okay. Yeah, Don, we lost you there for a minute. Okay.
Hello.
Go ahead, Don. Do you have somebody on the line? I don't know if we've got a bad connection or et cetera, but that sounded like Lisa Marie Dean.
Oh, okay.
That I
can
heard
you hear
in the
me?
Background. Yeah. Yeah, go right ahead. What's your question?
Well, I was calling in. I was listening to the show, and Brother Terrell, did he disconnect or I don't know, but
I think
one
he
thing
did because Mr. Allen didn't get back in time to say that we had somebody holding. If we would have known that you were holding, but why don't you do this?
Well,
why don't you go ahead and ask the question over the air to the general public that you were contemplating?
Well, I was kind of listening to him and just thinking about the events that's going on in the community and the year, and it seems like you know politics has taken the life out of our leaders. One thing I heard him say is voting. He wants to make sure he gets, you know, the information out so that people can vote, and that's something that we always do all the time. And I know that we did meet at the Capitol. We called it African American Lobby Day, and so that was kind of that was something that was kind of successful. And what I wanted to ask him was from the time.
Let's just see and start. Mr. Terrell, are you still with us? I heard a voice in the background. I don't know if that was him. Or Mr. Allen.
Yeah, I'm still with you. I'm planning on just listening in.
Oh, okay.
But I don't.
Mr. Terrell is still with us. Go ahead and ask your question directly.
Yes.
Yeah, so you know, I was on the Council of Black Minnesotans when Lester Collins was there. So I do have a little bit of knowledge of being on that committee and how it was influenced by the government and, you know, corporations and things like that. But one thing I wanted to ask you from the time you said that you started working with Take Action and where you are now, it's good to hear that you are working on hiring someone to come and work on behalf of whatever the mission or the agenda is. But one thing I wanted to know out, you know, from in our community and being able to see the conflict and the successes and the failures that's going on from when you went from the city to the state, are there specific individuals that you have identified within the community that you feel comfortable with working with ongoing that you have from when you got out of college until I don't know how old you are, you know, I really don't know, maybe like within the last 5 to 7 years, have you identified from a tornado? Because one thing I want to say is that You say that you don't want, we shouldn't be talking about homelessness and education, but that is very important. We want to make sure that education, that's number one. That should always be on the table, and homelessness should housing should always be on the table, because we have tornadoes that have, you know, came from the north side to the south side. So we have a lot of people that are homeless, so we want to make sure that there's a connection, that you always have a homelessness and education on the table. Because we have people that vote, but when we vote for people and then they appoint certain people, then we don't get, you know, the benefits of our voting. So we have to do more than just, you know, get a job and then get people out to get them to vote and look at it as if our job is done. Because, you know, we started with the movement, some moments that we wanted to turn into movements, but we seem to can't get there because we keep having these new people that just jump at the front of the line and say, well, we're going to do it this way. So I want to ask you, have you identified people over time to work with that you can bring to the table outside of the politics, outside of the testimonies, that you can bring to the table to get some work done on whatever it is that you're trying to accomplish in the community, north, south, east, west, wherever? Have you identified some people in the community? That's my question for you.
Yeah, I think, so just two things. First, just to clarify, like, you know, my background, you know, I've been an educator and I've also worked with homeless youth. And I think that housing and education absolutely are top priorities that we always have to keep on the table. I think just to clarify what I was saying before is just that, you know, I've been working in advocacy work for a long time, you know, since, you know, I would argue since before 2006, but at minimum since 2006. And that, you know, we just need to build the muscle and the tools to be able to work on those issues long term and not just, you know, show up and not get anything done every year. Because I don't know about you, but I would say we haven't gotten nearly enough done on those issues, and it's really hurting our people in the state. So that's why I'm saying, not to say we shouldn't work on them. I'm saying that we need to build a long-term strategy. And then in regards to your specific question around who am I working with, yeah, I want to build a coalition. I think we need to build like a strong black-led coalition. If you look at other parts of the state, like the progressive white movement, they have a strong coalition. They raise money together. They run shared campaigns, and they get a lot of their things done. They would argue that they picked the last governor, and they're going to pick the next governor. And so, like, when you talk about voting, like, yeah, I think voting is important, but I think it's more important that you don't just show up and try to get people to vote in the fall, but that you also get folks to engage at the Capitol, engage in the community,
Is the progressive white movement a political group, or is it a private group?
It's a political group. It's like the unions and nonprofits, like Take Action Minnesota and Isaiah, and you know, my point is that they have their coalition, and we don't, as far as black folks. And so, one of my goals, you know, in this role is to help develop a black-led coalition that works on the issues that we care about long-term. So, you know, the folks I work with the most right now in the last 5 years have been like Ujamaa Place, Mad Dads, Better Futures. You know, I worked with the Fathers Project, which is part of Goodwill Easter Seals. You know, if you notice in a trend here, these are all like black-led organizations that work primarily with black men, but been impacted by the criminal justice system, because those are the areas that I worked in. But I'd love to expand that group, you know, times 20 and work with as many black-led organizations in the state as we can put together to put together a long-term strategic plan.
Okay.
And
all
what
right.
about funding? Are you guys prepared to fund organizations that you bring to the table?
You know,
are you prepared to provide any kind of grant funding or any training or any type of direction to assist some organizations? Because the reason why I ask that is because we always have the same people that come to the table. We never welcome new organizations because some of the new organizations may need some kind of help along the way. So as far as some type of guidance, in addition to grants or how, and what way to steps to apply for them, is that, do you guys have within your budget a way to set aside funding to assist organizations that come to the table that can prove themselves effective to get the work done as far as contractors or things like that? How does that work? Because we want to make sure that we don't want all the money going to one organization, not to mention just money, because we always hear money. I've been working in the community for almost 20 years, so we always hear this money, but it's never going where it needs to go, but in people's pockets. You know, people get new houses and new cars, but the community, they're homeless, and the numbers still increase when it comes to our to the oppression and all that kind of stuff, you know. So I want to make sure that you're prepared to put money in people's pocket along with yours.
So Mr. Edwards and Mr. Allen, I'm sure you guys are tired of hearing me talk, but I think this is a really important question. So let me just say, first of all, like, I think, do I have money in my budget to do that? Like, yes and no. Like, you know, I've set aside $40,000 to make small grants and do small contracts up to $5,000 for folks from the community. And that's, you know, that's helpful to some folks. But let's be honest, that's not the project you're talking about. Second, I would say that I actually have, quite a bit of history raising money. And you know, my previous budget, the organization I worked at before this, was bigger than the one I'm working at now. And my goal was to raise $1 million to re-grant to Black-led organizations. And there's a big part of me that still wants to continue that work. Now, I will say...
Did you raise it and did you give it to someone?
No, but I was working on it.
Okay. All right.
Here's my point. More important, here's the problem. Like, a lot of folks, and I'm going to be real, a lot of people come to me and they're like, yo, can we get some money from the council? And I get why that's the case, but I want to shift the conversation. It is not about getting money from the council as a state agency. Like, there may be a time for us to do that. There may not be. But what I'm more interested in is building the strategy where we are, where we have a table of organizations that are sophisticated enough to raise money together strategically, to re-grant it into the community, invest it in the community, and produce real outcomes. Keep in mind, like I said, produce real outcomes, because that's the part that I think that always gets left off. Like, we can always move money around to our friends, but the reality is that we need a strategic plan to produce real outcomes. And we need to quit, like, begging, you know, folks with money for dollars, and we need a strategic plan to the point where it's like we're organizing folks. And that's something that, like, I have a little bit of history, a little bit of experience doing, is being a table worker.
Can I say this?
Okay,
I'm done after this.
He's at the Council of Minnesota for African Heritage. You can call him and he'll answer the phone.
How can the public get in contact with you? Thank you.
How can the public get in contact with me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes. I know. Y'all gotta move on with y'all program. Thanks for the time. Here's my number.
No.
Y'all can reach me.
Don was just giving me the information. So what do you mean?
I mean, give her the number to the council.
Okay.
Give her the direct
call.
She'll call. Go ahead.
I don't want it for myself.
So,
I want it for the public. You know. Thank you.
So let me give y'all all the information. So you can reach me at 651-356-1820. That's my cell phone number. That's the best way to reach me. Once again, 651-356-1820. My email is Justin. What was that? My email is Justin.
What is your title?
I'm the executive director of the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage. And my email is justin.terrell, T-E-R-R-E-L-L, @state.mn.us. And our office is at the Centennial Office Center. All right, thank you, John. I appreciate it.
All right, good. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Durrell. Appreciate it, and thank you, Ms.
Thank
Dean.
You. Appreciate it. Yep.
I'm getting text messages. We got people holding and et cetera. Appreciate
it. We do.
Good discussion.
All right.
And, take care. All right.
I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thank both of you. Okay.
What do we got, Mr. Allen? What do we got? Who we got holding
Yes, we have some people that have been holding for a while here. Let me get this first caller here, been holding the longest here. Last four is 8267. Let's see if they even come in here. We're going to try to get them in. I'm sorry for being away, Mr. Edwards. We were having a little bit of technical difficulty. Okay, and it was not some of the phone lines. We got inundated with people in the chat room. And I'm going to see what's going to happen now. And just let me see if they come in. I'm pressing the button, and we'll see what happens here. But anyway, we can keep going until this phone line thing, they're trying to straighten it out right now. So the server is too busy. We just got swamped with calls. Quick, fast, and hurry,
yeah, well,
and that's okay.
Know, yeah, a lot of people probably want to talk to a new state official. But it doesn't seem that he'll have anything really ready to go until probably July or thereabouts. So, you know, you probably want to contact him then and, you know, invite him back on, if you will. Are we still waiting to get any calls in? Do we have any calls over?
Yes. They give them about, they say about 20 seconds here and they're having. Yeah, we have two people on hold right now. And be patient with us. We apologize. Blog Talk Radio is working on those connections. See what happens here. Yeah, one of the things, it's buffering, so I have to wait till it gets done buffering here, Mr. Edwards. So we'll see what happens here momentarily.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, while I do this here, we can figure out, just a second here. I am working on this. Okay.
Yeah, because I can tell by the text message, et cetera, people are wondering what happened.
Yes, we have someone.
We have no control.
Could
be the NSA. We don't know.
Yes, we have someone live on the air now. 8659 from area code 803. You're live on the air. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're live on the air.
Yes, we can. Sir. Sounds like Mr. Washington out of Carolina. Thank you. Welcome, sir.
That's correct. I want to speak about the topic about my brother once again.
Go right ahead, sir. We've already reached agreement with your associates and et cetera. Let me just ask a question to help our audience flow into this discussion. I'm understanding at this particular hour that your family has not received the death certificate in the matter of the beating death of your brother while in Canty, Ohio County Jail. Is that correct?
That's correct, and I spoke with the Attorney General about this, Laurie Swanson, in office in St. Paul. And at first, they were stonewalling, and they realized that when a body is being investigated, they're supposed to have a death certificate accompany the body. They're also supposed to have a removal of body when somebody dies someplace before they move the body. They had to have file a certificate to remove a body. So yes, you're correct.
Yeah.
We still haven't received a death certificate.
And your brother has been deceased now, what is it, about 24 days? On the 7th day of January?
Yeah, 24 days today.
2018?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I also contacted the medical examiner's office again, and the records in Wilmer. And they now sent me an email this morning, I mean later on today, about filling an application to get a copy of the death certificate. But it's still, that's kind of ironic, you know. And I was explaining to them the body's supposed to be accompanied with one, and they want to have a conversation about it in the wrong manner. So I said, okay, we just paid the money to get the death certificate.
So Canty, Ohio, and we just had a black government official from Minnesota who was telling us how wonderful the people up in Canty, Ohio are, and that he had dinner with the white mayor up there and et cetera. I'm afraid, Mr. Allen, that the state official, the black state official we just had on, is not aware or is not concerned about the death of George Edward Washington at the hands of Canty, Ohio deputies while in the custody of the police there. And I'm really sorry for that, Mr. Washington. People like to think that there's a little better governance here in the state of Minnesota, people a little bit more liberal and compassionate, but my long experience is that that's all a bunch of hogwash. But if I could continue on, sir. We know that there is now no death certificate. By the way, your brother's body is in the state of South Carolina. In fact, had to be taken from Minnesota is an outgrowth of legal action by you and his other heirs in order to receive even a decent autopsy. Is that also correct based on last week's conversation?
Yeah, that is correct too. We went through, my family and I went through a lot just to get him done and have our service, and you know, view the body and have it looked at from our perspective, because you know, like I said earlier, when I called last week, I think it's a cover up, because how can everybody that I talk to in different departments get to a point where they start stonewalling and saying that's a legal matter? When I asked you about an autopsy, you said it's a legal matter. When I asked you, I even called for the preliminary autopsy, which is when you have a body going in the autopsy, they got to do examination, visual examination, they got to record it. And that's not
right.
The final autopsy, but I was trying to get a copy of that. And she's a lady named Kat from the Minnesota, the medical examiner office
the Midwest Medical Examiners Association in Ramsey, Minnesota. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. She tried to explain to me that it doesn't matter because that's not the final outcome. And then she said something that really blew. She really said something that blew my mind, and I had to give her some knowledge. She made the comment to me that George probably had COPD. And I say it's possible because he smoked. And she go, well, I was told that he was a chronic alcoholic. So I'm like, well, who told you that? She go, your sister. So I go, which one? She go, the sheriff told me that. So I'm like, wait a minute, hold on, back up. What is your job? She said, I'm a death investigator. So what is this? What did the sheriff comment about that have to do with he's dead? He was murdered. Well, I'm just going by what I heard. Then she changed it up. No, this is what you need to do. I said, no, let's go back to the comment that you made. Why would the sheriff don't look at people and tell if they're alcoholics or an addict? That should never have came out your mouth. I'm calling you about autopsy and a death report, and you're telling me what the sheriff said. So when I got that comment, it took me back to when I first started this crusade for my brother. They stonewall and they lying. They're going to try to cover each other's tracks. You can keep on lying, but pretty sooner or later, the truth's going to come out. Because if you tell one lie,
I have to say to you,
lying.
Sir, that it's quite clear, and it's one of the reasons that the conversation took place with a black office holder, that the fix is in through every facet of so-called activism here in the state of Minnesota, civil rights organization. Let me say to the audience that last week, the gentleman that is on the phone with us right now shared with us the fact that he had approached both the Urban League of Minneapolis, that's the only one left, and the NAACP, and they had both told him, he has the names of the individuals that told him, that those organizations have nothing to do with matters like that. We later sent an inquiry to the, and my associate, Mr. Allen, at the very top of this program, happened to ask the question for purpose and effect. The commissioner of the Department of Human Rights was approached and asked to open a case file. He declined, NAACP declined, Urban League declined, black leadership, et cetera, declined. And so people around the world and in the United States need to know that this family, the Washington family, have been totally and absolutely stonewalled in what was a brutal murder of a 56-year-old African-American, Mr. Joseph Washington's brother, if you will, while in police custody. And it just continues to amaze me, though I've seen it happen quite frequently in this state. But when I heard a black government official here in the state of Minnesota purposely thinking that he had slipped in a reference to the good white folks of Kandy, Ohio County, and Wilmer, I have to tell you, Mr. Washington, that was a clear indication. That was a shot across the bow that they're all in on the fix. I appreciate you confirming the steps that you had to take to get the Attorney General's office to finally confirm that there has to be a death certificate. I mean, I know that black people in the state of Minnesota don't have any rights, and we're nothing more than property, but God have mercy, man. You always are supposed to have a death certificate. We know that the gentleman on the phone with us, Mr. Washington, Joseph Washington, has been told that it may be 8, 9, 10 weeks before he gets the autopsy. Is that correct, Mr. Washington? I don't want to put words in your mouth, and I don't want anybody accusing us of making up information. Am I correct with that, sir?
No, you're correct, because I called the Midwest again yesterday. She said the same thing about how long it was going to take, and that's about the right duration of what I can get an autopsy. She's saying, well, the toxicology report would take up most of that time, you know.
Right.
But I've been calling every day. I've been calling every office. I've been backtracking, trying to find out where the body first went to. Again, today I called the administrator of the Wilmer Hospital, and again, no return calls. But I will get the attention tomorrow, because I feel like they're voicemail. I'll force them.
Yes. The word is that the hospital is concerned about its liability, with regards to the fact that they viewed and did do a partial examination of your deceased brother. It was quite clear the injuries that he had suffered were the direct outgrowth of a physical beating. Broken jaw, broken nose, impact to the side of the head, defensive wounds on his arm, body, testicles, and et cetera. I just, Mr. Allen, I really have to tell you, brother, it is amazing what has evolved here in the last 10 or 12 days with regards to so-called leadership, including black public officials who have been directed to help with this cover-up of the death of this African-American on January 7th, 2018, in the Canty, Ohio. You know, when I had a person on this program tell us what a great white man the mayor was and et cetera, and I have to say to you, Mr. Allen, you know, the gentleman in question, the state official, thought he was slipping that question in, that he'd been up there in Canty, Ohio. That's outrageous. Mr. Washington.
Well, my question to him, I think you need to be drug tested. If you think Canty, Ohio is just that comfortable, when I was on their website and seeing the state official said, we don't want no Somalians here, because that's a straight connection with jihadists. You know, I read everything about their county online that I can. So it's not a welcoming community for anybody other than white folks. And like I said before, I've been up there, so I know. I've been there. I've been to Casey's. When you drop my change on counter, when I put my money in your hand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, but I've been contacted today. Yesterday or today? I think it was today. This morning I got contacted from I'm not going to call his name, an intern at NAACP, and he gave me a number to call. That was yesterday evening. He gave me a number to call, and I called it twice and left a message. I have yet to hear from them. I had a couple of law firms to call me that people referred me to, and they guided me through the steps. And they said if they take on the case, they will get an autopsy report and a death certificate, and question why a death certificate wasn't accompanying the body. And question why, what's on the autopsy? Question why, what was in his stomach? Because the death certificate, the death certificate, did the lady read, or she read the time to me that he expired. She said expired at 1:55.
Oh, my
Cheryl
God.
Said,
moved it
the sheriff said.
From 1:30 in the paper
right.
on the 10th of January, now it sits up
right.
to 1:55, I see.
She said 1:55. Then the witness said she was there at that time when you and I had a conversation with her. So the timeline for what
did.
She said, the timeline for what she said and what the sheriff said and what the medical examiner said, somebody's lying.
Absolutely. And let me absolutely clarify for our international and the local and domestic audience, the sheriff is quoted in the January 10th, 2018 edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, the largest paper in the state of Minnesota, that the time of death was at 1:30 p.m. They tried to revive him, couldn't allegedly, but revive him. Mr. Washington and myself and at least the two people who were witnesses have established clearly at what time his body was actually being removed from the jail and rushed to the hospital, a hospital which, upon seeing George Edward Washington's body, indicated they wanted no part of it, and consequently the body was then shipped to the Harvey Anderson Funeral Home in Wilmer. I'm aware of this conversation, these conversations that have been taking place here in my state, if you will, among so-called civil rights leadership and black government officials. And they have clearly been told that they are to work diligently to cover this murder up. Now, we've had two new homicides, very questionable, of one person of color, female, one person of color, male, shot and killed, if you will, by vigilantes. And question went out this afternoon, what does the civil rights organizations and the commissioner of the human rights and other organizations, and what they've said, Mr. Washington, is that right now they're entertaining themselves on the Super Bowl. They're looking forward to the Super Bowl. They're looking forward to partying as they're doing. Mr. Allen has of some of our quote-unquote leaders in nightclubs and et cetera. The only thing that they're holding is definitely not the scales of justice. It's quote-unquote alcohol. In some cases, they're holding drugs. So
yeah, it's,
that's
it's,
the
it's,
way
it's,
things
it's,
are working up here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sad how you can just take a life. And I understand what's going on in Minnesota right now. It's really sad for our neighborhoods to be ran through rampant by the police and lock us up for Super Bowl. You can't ride the train on certain days because of the Super Bowl. Now the jails are packed now with our brothers. They're rounding them up just like cattle and just locking them up for no reason at all. We don't want you on the streets. You are refusing
right.
of society. You're no good.
Right.
You're nothing to us.
Let me just say this in support of what Mr. Washington is saying from his location in the southeastern part of the United States. I'm here. I'm on the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
Special units of United States Marshals and others have been on the move for the last 2.5 weeks, Mr. Allen, and they have rounded up now over 100 so-called, quote-unquote, fugitives. That does not include the general population flow of African-Americans. Who are being put in facilities and locked up to make the streets safe for Caucasians. It was one of the reasons that there was a absence of significant police response last night when a 21-year-old African-American female was gunned down in the middle of the 2200 block on Lindale Avenue North, as well as the deaths of two persons of color at the hands of white vigilantes, or in the case of one, an Asian vigilante. So it's out of control. And what the conversation now is that, well, after the Super Bowl's over and everybody gets to partying and et cetera, maybe we'll take a look at what's happening in the death of George Edward Washington. I just don't think, Joseph, I don't think that's acceptable. Anything else that you have as we move towards a conclusion? If
no,
we have about 18 minutes left.
I would just like to thank you, Ron and Don, for allowing me to be on your show, and I just want to keep my brother in the spotlight, and I want some answers. Like I stated before, if I go out and kill somebody, I have to be held accountable, and those sheriffs and everybody in that county need to be held accountable for what they did.
Yes, sir.
And again,
thank you, sir.
Again,
appreciate it.
I'd like to thank you, and y'all have a good night.
Thank you. All right, take care.
All right.
Okay.
Dallin, we have anybody else? Let's get them in.
Yes, we do.
Fresh voices, though. I don't want to hear a repeat. Really.
Yeah, we're having some challenges here again with the phone lines, but we have M on hold and we have someone else on hold, except the thing just keeps buffering, and that's part of the issue. I've gotten several emails already from Blog Talk Radio apologizing profusely regarding this, and we apologize, M. You are in the queue. Your thing is buffering there, but they're just the phone lines are packed. The chat room is packed. And
let's do this and maintain a flow of airtime. What was your feeling as you heard Joseph Washington, the brother of the deceased, beaten to death in the Kandy, Ohio County Jail on the 7th day of January? What did you pick up in hearing it? And do you have, is there any specific questions on your mind, particularly with regards to, see, if the body had been cremated and they'd have been able to get away with what it was they were trying to get away with, we would be blasted. Being blasted right now by black leadership, civil rights, so-called civil rights leadership, black state officials, and et cetera, for carrying the big lie. But dead body was not cremated, it's really difficult. But your observation is valid until we can get some other voices in.
Yeah, I think that this is a serious problem, and my concern, Mr. Edwards, has always been the civil rights organizations. The Urban League, the NAACP, who choose to ignore this and walk away and not take it seriously, or ask the guy, like he told us a week ago or so, that the NAACP, someone who answered the phone, said, do you have a high-priced lawyer? You know, as
That's
if they wanted to be on a judge.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I just think the next step is getting those people's names and putting it out here.
All those,
just
those,
saying, hey,
those
you know,
names are known, and the conversations were recorded.
Should get the MP3s, download them, and play them on the air. I mean, that's probably the next thing we need to do, because this is ridiculous. And Mr. Edwards, we do have a caller, friend of the show, M. You're live on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, greetings, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. And the reason I wanted to just follow up, but I think the previous caller, you know, Mr. Washington, boy, that is such a sad blight, you know, on the state of Minnesota and their treatment of African Americans. But, and I think he did answer my question, because I think towards the end of his talk, he did mention getting a lawyer. And boy, I would really hope he could just find him a really good attack dog lawyer who's documenting every one of the missteps that these people have done. You know, this is not going to bring their dear brother back. We understand that. But I think they really need to have the heat put on them, because they clearly aren't taking it serious. They clearly aren't, you know, being a very cavalier attitude. And I really wish they would have a really top-notch attack dog lawyer to kind of put these people up against the wall to give answers and to document all of these missteps along the way. So I hope and encourage that he'll find someone that can, you know, help him through this. And do things
well,
like
let me just say that he has been in contact and has talked to a Pacific law firm here in the Twin Cities, as well as he is receiving help from a couple of black law firms in the Carolinas. You're absolutely correct. That is being done. We were trying to wait on a call to come through with regards to, again, I was just stunned by hearing a black official of the state government indicate how great the white folks in Kandy, Ohio County are, when, in fact, there is documentation on the websites about the neo-Nazi activity, though the person that we had on this program earlier did slip up and talk in terms of working with the Somali situation in Wilmer. Man, they've done everything they could to run the Somalis out of Wilmer, Minnesota. I don't know what people are talking about working with the Somalis. Death threats have been made, and in fact, in some situations, there have been the mysterious deaths of black Somalians in and around Kandy, Ohio, and in and around Wilmer, Minnesota, and et cetera. But go ahead, Jim.
All the type of things that could add fuel to, you know, to a lawsuit. And as we've seen from history, you know, like the great Thurgood Marshall, I happened to watch that movie the other day. I have differing thoughts on the movie, but the things that can happen if you start to shake things up and you can bring the light of day on these things, you know, a good press conference on this issue, you know, that's distributed, you know, worldwide about what's going on this issue. I mean, things can begin to change. I mean, it's only when you shine the light on people, I think we begin to see things happen. And I don't know what to say about our NAACPs. Is there such an organization here in Minnesota or Urban League? I mean, you would think that they would be able to be a fulcrum and be able to direct people to the proper legal parameters and also be on board themselves
to shout this message of injustice that's going on. So we've talked about it before, gentlemen, here in our great Minnesota, and like we were saying, the Super Bowl coming up, they're so distracted by that. It's very sad.
And particularly in light of the fact that no money is really going in. The only person that will make a significant financial killing, if you will, is Louis King. Dr. King has put together a juggernaut. He's got total control of his operation inside of the stadium. He is the only concessioner inside the stadium. He has a food truck on the outside. There's another black food truck that has been given certification by Homeland Security. That truck will also be allowed to operate outside of the stadium itself. But inside, the only entity inside that is totally controlled by an African-American is Louis King's chicken wing concession. I heard someone try to make a statement on Sunday that that he wouldn't be able to make any more than $20,000
or $30,000.
Oh, please. Thank you.
Edwards, I did see something in the paper a few days back about a food market in North Minneapolis. Apparently, they got a grant from the NFL, $50,000.
Is that right? I see that. Enlighten us. We've got time. Enlighten us, and they got $50,000 to do what?
No, is this actually a food market that's in North Minneapolis? I'm not familiar with that.
Technically, there are three so-called oases, if you will. One is the one used to be the Kowalski food market, which is like up on 46th and 10. That is run and controlled by Pillsbury United. There's one on Golden Valley Road and 10. In the Devin George apartment building, and there is one more that was open. These are small facilities, if you will. I don't know who the NFL gave the money to in regards to that, but that's interesting.
So it's Pillsbury that runs the markets? Is that? Yes.
The former Kowalski is run by Pillsbury United, yes. Mm-hmm.
Because the article was made you believe it might have been a black owned organization, and I guess the money has to funnel through and trickles down to the community somehow. Yes, I don't know.
Of course, $50,000. They're betting that much right now in certain hotels in poker games, invitation only. As we speak, somebody may have even turned on the computer and listened and laughed at, quote unquote, the black folks talking in terms of being able to access. Now, as I said before, only Louis King is going to make, quote unquote, the kind of money that represents a good economic and business practice. Would you not agree on this, Alex?
Oh, I agree. I agree 100%. He's gonna walk away smiling and very happy.
Yes, sir. So. Yes, sir. So that's what we got. We reported at the top of tonight's program, we have sent our condolences to the 21-year-old African-American gunned down, shot, killed, body in the middle of the street there on Lindale Avenue, 2200 block. You know, this new council that came in, the mayor and some of the council members of color maintained that they had the antidote, if you will, to end violence in North Minneapolis, get guns off the street, and et cetera. And I had to remind some folks and said it on my television program that will air Sunday, is that, the violence started as quickly as 2:25 a.m. on January 1. A lot of people don't. He won't talk about that, Mr. Allen and him. We had our first homicide,
yep.
Young African-American gunned down in the streets, if you will. We've had even more. And it just amazes me the silence. I mean, there's a quiet. But like I said, I guess I understand. Now, see, I'm a sports buff. And you are also in. Now, my associate, Mr. Allen, admits that he's not much of a sports guy. But I'm telling you the stories and excuses that I've heard for a number of months is that as soon as we get through with the Super Bowl, we'll take a look at some of the problems facing the black community.
I don't know why I did this, but when I learned the Super Bowl was coming, for some reason I thought I'd make some calls to see about purchasing a ticket. Now, I've never been to a football game at the new stadium yet.
I haven't either. Yeah.
I'd like the Super Bowl, and so I, you know, made some calls, and someone called me back and, you know, said that, you know, he started throwing out figures. The first figure they threw out was $15,000.
Mm-hmm.
And so is that a suite for how many people?
No, that's
and they said, no, that's just one ticket. That's one seat, okay?
That's right.
That's one seat, and it's not a prime seat, they said.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And
well,
at
least they were being honest with you.
They were being honest, and I was being honest with them, too. I said, thank you very much, and, you know, I will not be attending, you know, at those
prices.
$15,000?
Yeah, for a seat.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's
the governor of our state, the governor of our beloved state, demanded and fought very hard to get that stadium built and committed over $500 million to the construction of that stadium. He was shrewd enough just a week and a half ago to purchase tickets at a cut rate. The NFL, you know, did the cut rate. Actually, the governor should have been let in free as far as I'm concerned. But he spent $6,000 for preferred seats for he and a couple of his grandchildren. Now, those seats would have gone to anybody else who was not the governor of the state for about $75,000 to $100,000.
The obscenity as these things go around, you know, shootings in North Minneapolis, you know, the sad Kennedy, Ojai situation, and resources just poured in to, you know, this type of an event. It's really really kind of contrast to really watch. Really, really, really something to see. You're taken off the streets. You can't ride the public transportation. You can't. You're being pretty much ushered out of the town to allow others to enjoy.
That's a good word, ushers. Yeah, you're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. You'd be surprised. I really can't go into the details for matters of confidentiality and security. You'd be surprised at the number. Well, no, maybe three of us on this particular call would not be. You'd be surprised at the number of black folks and others that have been rounded up and put into a holding cell. They should have reactivated Guantanamo, and they could have shipped some folks down there to hold them incommunicado. But you'd be surprised.
I actually saw a clip. I actually saw a clip, what appeared to be military garb.
We have military garb
that were what? You know, I don't know if this was just a scare tactic to show you that
No. You're speaking to the people that know. This is the Minnesota National Guard, who the state of Minnesota has been paid a couple of million dollars. And these troops, 99% white, are being deployed on the streets primarily of downtown. And so you're correct. Those are Minnesota National Guard. Now, that's not to be confused with the other federal agencies, as well as Homeland Security, CIA, and et cetera. You know, we've already had a situation where there was a quote-unquote penetration of the security corridor, if you will. Again, I'm at this point, I'm not able to indicate where it happened. I know where it happened, and I know the circumstances, but... I was sworn to confidentiality and et cetera. It's just unbelievable what is happening. But the level of security forces
that have been deployed throughout this city, man, is staggering. And black folks are being rounded up. Mr. Alvin is sitting there looking at his video and computer right now, and we've got all of these folks partying, black folks partying and jumping up and down.
Partying hard.
But in regard hard, getting in regards to getting the National Guard, gentlemen, I know that Mr. Allen has some military background.
Mr. Allen's regular army, aren't you, Doc?
Isn't calling the National Guard doesn't there have to be some type of imminent threat before you can mobilize?
There is. The word that is used is security preparation.
This is a game.
Yeah, but there's a lot of money involved. You'd be surprised. One of the things that the city of Minneapolis, and this is being said here tonight on this program by Mr. Allen and Mr. Edmund, the city of Minneapolis is going to be looking by April the 1st at least a $7 to $10 million deficit. The Minneapolis Police Department by itself. Okay.
Dang.
Now, what happened was the NFL had initially promised the city of Minneapolis and its law enforcement as much as $15 million. They gave them $3 million and told them to do the best you can. The host committee for this Super Bowl glory has a budget of $80 million. $80 million. And somebody pointed out to me, even though they keep saying that they're having events in North Minneapolis, you can't find a sign in North Minneapolis that talks about the Super Bowl. I dare you. I tell them to go find one
right
now.
That is downtown? As close as that is in proximity to downtown?
That's right. Now, this has been a goldmine. For the Caucasian community, for the white community here in Minnesota. I mean, there's no doubt about it. They brought in at least 3,000 law enforcement officers, 99.9% white, from all these small towns. Let me give you an example so anybody want to tell. Ely, Minnesota, which is way up on the range. Nice little town.
Canadian border.
Yeah. They have a little over 3,000. So they have a 7-person police department, including the chief. Three of their 7 officers are deployed here in the Twin Cities as we speak.
Oh, someone's going to get shot.
Wilmer, Minnesota, the town that a black public official on this program earlier tonight declared to be a beautiful place with nice folks, et cetera. At least 30% of the city police department and 20% of the Canandaigua High Sheriff's Department are now deployed on the streets of our city. So, Mr. Allen is absolutely correct. But the training and the discipline that has been at play, and people now are complaining about the National Guard. I said, man, the host committee a year ago indicated that the National Guard was going to be deployed during Super Bowl week, and it's actually more than a week, But I'll tell you what, you don't see many black folks who got them uniforms on and wearing those masks and et cetera. But, hey, they are, as someone said, they are the home guard, Now, you and I, as historians know where that actually came from. That came from England, the Home Guard. But hey, your leader said that it's not appropriate to raise questions. And as long as they're partying and drinking and doing whatever else as we move up on 10 o'clock, that's all that matters. Said when the Super Bowl comes back here again in about 30 years, maybe we'll do it better next time.
So, yeah, I hope so.
Thanks, Em. Mr. Allen, we're just about to the end of tonight's program. I think it's been a heck of a program. We got a lot of insight about legislative preparation and things like that. Jim, want to thank you for calling in, brother.
Anytime, gentlemen. Hope to talk to you soon.
Right. Yeah, we'd like to thank our guests.
Why don't you play the song, We Shall Overcome?
Yeah, we should, because I had James Brown going, but you know what? We're going to hit it right now. Here we go.
We shall overcome. We shall overcome. God bless you.
My song.